messages are all over the charts when it comes to their style or their purpose and so on. Today, I'm going to be really, I think, at peace if I get through all of this and keep you all on board. This is, today is probably a little bit too much like a college class, and I just put it together that way, and I worked hard on it, but it's not going to be lightweight in that regard. I say in the program to buckle up, and I really mean that. I want you to stay with me because we're going to go a lot of places, and just don't start thinking about the brunch you're going to or whatever, okay? Stay with me on this. Now, I'll tell you this. I'll be satisfied if I get through it and if you stay with me and the Spirit of God moves in our hearts. Sue will be satisfied if my T-shirt doesn't start popping out all over. She's dressing me during... we got problems now or are we okay? All right. So, I just better keep my hands still and we'll see what happens there. I wanted to say that this is a day where, as dads... I think we take inventory. My morning started with a phone call from Germany, which when you hear the phone ring on Sunday morning early, I know that it's Kristen, and that was really precious. And then to be here today and to see John and Becky and Justin here, that's just the best Father's Day I could ever have, to have you guys here. And I know that the other dads share that kind of feeling. There's a connection to our own children that just supersedes all of our other wonderful relationships, but it really does. And as dads, I want us to embrace the love we're given today, but return it and increase it. And, you know, a lot of us don't have our dads anymore, and there are even some young people in here who don't have our dads anymore. And I find that what I do, because I love my dad so much, is I talk about him. I tell the kids about him. I think about him all the time. And that somehow, I think, honors him, and it keeps him going in our family. And I just urge you all to do that. And maybe it wasn't a dad for you. Maybe it was a grandpa. Maybe it was an uncle. But it was a father figure. And so I encourage you in that way. We have, the first 3 weeks, we got through three whole verses of Genesis 1. Then last week, we took off down the path a little bit, and today, we'll get virtually through chapter 1. But we can see if this, ba-boom, is it there? Yay, okay. And we'll try to stay with this. If I had to give this message a title, it would be these two words: differentiation and dominion. So we're going to talk about what I mean by those two terms, because to misunderstand them is to, I think, miss the point of their use in this discussion. And this is a very important thing. As I've said throughout this whole series, if we get so in our cynicism that we diminish Genesis 1 through 11 to less than it needs to be, then we're beginning to lose our foundation. And I think we are. And I think we need to reclaim it. We need to understand that. Now you see there, under differentiation and dominion, you see kindness, and you see mannishness. Don't be put off by this term mannishness. I think it's kind of fun for me. I'll tell you, that term was coined by Francis Schaeffer, whom I've mentioned many times. And it's in the dictionary now, and that's cool. He used it in this book, Genesis and Space and Time. And as I was preparing this message, here's what I'm thinking. That I'm 20 years old, I'm in the dorm at Wesleyan, my grades are lousy, and I don't care. What What I care about are the books that I'm reading, the books that I'm devouring, the books that are pouring some kind of meaning into me, because the books I'm reading for class are kind of taking that meaning out of me. And I have to have something that serves to counter the growing despair of someone whose whole entire study is man's search for meaning, and you just keep coming up empty and coming up empty and coming up empty. And is there meaning to be had? And is there truth to be known? And is there such a thing as an absolute? And this is important. And so I find C.S. Lewis out of nowhere, and I find Francis Schaeffer. And these two guys were really the ones who began this work in me of understanding that I didn't have to check my intellect at the door to be a Christian. Quite the opposite. And I want you to know that. That if you think you have to check your intellect at the door, and that this is some kind of a blind leap into a darkness called faith, that's not a good way to look at it. That's not accurate. That's not right. That's ridiculous. I think of what Paul says in Acts when he's talking about Jesus. He's talking about Jesus to the king, to either Agrippa or Felix. And he says, "You know, king, these things about Jesus were not done in a corner." Now, what does he mean by that? These things were not done in a corner. These things were not hidden. These things were not off to the side where you couldn't make an assessment. Jesus lived his life right in the midst. He pitched his tent right in the midst of his community. And he lived it openly, so expressively. And the other thing he did is he didn't allow falsehood or false accusations to deter him from speaking the truth. And so it wasn't done in a corner at all. And I think that that is one of the great concerns of our day, is that Christians, we kind of just are on a slow retreat of what is essential Christianity. And we have to make a decision. Am I going to be a standard bearer, which just means faithful, for Christ? Or am I just somewhere in between? We want to be faithful. We want to understand that the things that we grow to believe about Jesus are the things that the world needs to know about Jesus. And we need to ask God for grace and patience and gentleness and kindness. So, we have differentiation and dominion. Now, what do I mean by differentiation? Let's open to Genesis 1. We're going to see this. I would estimate that Genesis 1 has somewhere around 15 markers of differentiation. Differentiation. Differentiation saying, this is uniquely designed to be different from that. Now, it's as evident and as clear as something we see early on when we see in verse 4, "And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness." Do you understand that that's a differentiation? There is this thing, light. And when there's light, there's no darkness. When there's no light, there's darkness. That's differentiation on a grand and massive scale. But this idea of things being distinct is the essence of differentiation here. Now, today I am speaking for creation, And I'm also speaking against what we would call macroevolution. And when I say macroevolution, I mean the kind of view of evolution that says there was accidental matter, there was accidental energy, and the accidental matter and the energy came together and they formed a protein molecule, and the protein molecule divided, and it liked the feeling of dividing, and so it kept dividing, and some slime was formed, and that slime became something that started to erupt into different kinds. Now, I think it's so interesting, friends, so important, that in this first chapter of Genesis, it's very clear that this message is to impute in us a sense that that macro from a single cell evolution is not the way the earth was created. It's intentional here. Differentiation is intentional. And differentiation is also saying, and God said. And remember what we said about the God saying, let there be light? He didn't really say, let there be light. He said, light exist. Land exist. Show yourself. So you see, that's a differentiation. We have water, now we have dry land. That's a differentiation. We have all of these things. And as we move through the days of creation, we have this sense that things are moving towards a conclusion, a build-up to a certain conclusion here, and we're going to get to that today. You see that I put the word kindness. Now, that's just a little play on words there, because Genesis so clearly states that there are kinds in creation. Let's just look at a few things here. Let's look, beginning here, at verse 11. And God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, each according to its kind on the earth. Now, here's an interesting place I think we need to do some business. When God created the world, we talked about this last week, but you all weren't here last week. Did he create 500 different breeds of dog for all the dog shows that were going to come? No, he didn't. He created canines after their kind. But here's what's beautiful about the brilliance of God, because I don't speak against microevolution, and let me define those things. Macroevolution says we all come from a single cell source, or a group of single cell sources that evolved into all these fabulous systems that are beyond our abilities to understand. I do believe in microevolution, because I believe that we have, God gave us kinds. As it says here about vegetation and plants yielding seed and fruits, I don't think there were, what do we call those little orange-like things? Clementines. What's the other name for them? Cuties, yeah. I don't know that they existed in creation. You know why? They've been bred. There have been plant breeders who have bred those things. God made this amazing creation so that it has a flexibility within it that adjustments or specific moves can be made within that system, that kind. But the scripture is so clear, and I think that common sense tells us this. Look again now at verse 21. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. I wonder how many kinds of birds there were, how many kinds of fish there were. I don't know. I don't know that there is a way to know. But I do know that God is saying here, understand me, as creator, I made birds. As creator, I made fish. As creator, I made horses. I made reptiles. I made these things. Look at verse 24. And God said, let the earth bring living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things, and beasts of the earth according to their kinds. Sue, this makes me ask you a question. Sue is my wife. She sits here. I have said that in retirement, maybe what I am called to do is raise livestock. You have said no. Now, we want to look, now, Sue, we want to be open to what God has here. It says, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds. It says livestock, and you say no. I don't plan to raise loose cows. Well, what is that? It says creeping things. Can I raise creeping things? How about beasts of the earth? Oh, my gosh. We got trouble. Verse 25, God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And then this recurring theme of creation, and God saw that it was good. And he says this over and over. God saw that it was good. So God would bring something that we read in Job, that when he created things, the heavenly hosts were, it was just like a giant pep rally. The heavenly hosts would just shout with joy at God's brilliant creation. And I think when God saw that it was good, is God just doing these things that he fully knows and fully understands. And listen, we're complicated, friends. Your body is more complicated than any computer that's ever been made. It's complicated. But God puts all this together and says, it's good. This is good. What should this do for us? Well, I hope it gives us confidence in the scriptures, but I hope something else. I hope it gives us confidence in God. In this personal God, that he's not a watchmaker. He didn't make me and you and say, okay, off with you now. No, we're going to get to that. Now, verse 26 is our key verse. Then, we've had all these, and God said, and God said, and God said, over and over. Now we have this. Then, God said, let us make man. The Hebrew word for man is Adam. Let us make Adam in our image, after our likeness. And then look at this. And let them, plural, have dominion over this creation. So I have here differentiation, kinds, and dominion. Now this word dominion is so important to us here. Dominion does not mean dominate. Man was not created to dominate all the things that God had made in creation. His dominion over them is a stewardship over them, not a domination over them. I love to listen to and embrace Christians who care deeply about the environment, because I think they're right to care deeply about the environment, because we are to have an authority over things, but not a raping of things, not a domination of things. It's to be a loving communion with each other over this creation. And so that's important. Now, he said, let us make man in our image. We're going to another slide. Did we do it? Okay. Home for Homo sapiens. Earth, man, and who in the world are we? Homo sapien. When I went to Wesleyan, I discovered that their seal is Scientia, A-E-T, Sapientia. Science and understanding. Homo is man. Sapiens, sapien, is wisdom, understanding, knowledge, sentience. This is the only creature in creation that has this sentience, this degree of understanding. The earth is made for a caretaker. The caretaker is made for the earth. We are that caretaker. We are the wise man. And of course, whenever I say man, I'm referring to mankind. So it's women as much as it's men. Absolutely. So now, as I said last week, I am just convinced by the structure of Genesis 1 and how similar in structure, as a literary person, I'm convinced that this is a song. That this Genesis 1 is a song. Because a song brings more to the recipient than just words. And I think this passage needs to bring more to us than just a word-for-word understanding. There's so much parallelism in this structure. And I think this song reaches a zenith in verse 26. And I'm serious when I say, when God said this, let us now make something that's like we are, that the heavenly hosts were like, oh my, what is he doing? This is beyond. This is fabulous. And he makes mankind. Verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Again, this is so important for us to note that we're not a gender-neutral creation. We're a gender-inclusive creation. You know, I look at married couples around here. I just see so many wonderful married couples. This is awesome. I see you, and I think this is just exactly what it's talking about here. He made it like this. For the song to reach a certain climax of joy happens in 26, 27, and 28. And we're going to get to 28 next week. But we're going to deal with now today, what are the implications of what I just said? Because I can blow through this, and I don't want you to be no different tomorrow. I want you to be different. I want you to think about these things, and I want you to understand the wonder of our creation. So here's the fundamental question. If you are someone to whom your model, the model view of your understanding of existence is the Darwinian or a neo-Darwinian view of things, then personality is a tough thing to include, because your understanding is survival of the fittest. Okay? What about personality? Do you have a personality? Christine, does Kyle have a personality? He really does. And Kyle, we need to talk about this a little bit. No, I love Kyle. I say this is our defining question. The answer to this question is really what, as Christians, we confess. When I say confess, I don't mean, oh, I'm sorry I did this. I mean, this I believe. It's also, I think, what we experience. We are not androids. We don't go around our day and everyone we meet is exactly programmed the same way we are and expounding in precise likeness to the way we are. No, because we're all so amazingly, wonderfully different. If our ambition, and some of you will remember this, that a few years ago I was a part of a special deal at ISU where they had five people up on stage and we had to respond to a play that was a fabulous play. And there was a man who was utterly a materialist. He was utterly a materialist. He's a professor at ISU, and he said, any sense of special creation, any sense of God, any sense of life beyond the material is nonsense. And what we need is reason. We need reason. We don't need faith. And he said, if you'll come with me to Wisconsin, I'll teach you how to eat, and I'll teach you how to think. And you'll come back a different person. And he didn't have any takers, thankfully. That was weird. But he meant it. His ambition is to deny meaning, and I think especially morality. Because he would say, morality, that's a man-made thing. Ignore it. Let's do our own thing. Okay? Oh, yeah. By the way, happy Father's Day. This is a little surprise. Not a happy one. But happy Father's Day. As we consider this, I want us to have a little bit of a historical understanding. I want you to meet two guys. I met these guys, and it shook me up. Our two guys are two German men. They're still alive. And these two German men are Horst von Wachter and Niklas Frank. And there's a movie on Netflix, and if you get Netflix, please watch this movie. And it's a movie about their fathers, and I don't remember the precise name, but I've watched it. That's classic. One of them says, my father was a Nazi leader and a brutal human being, and he is not to be honored. He is to be pitied. And I have to despise what he did. That's Niklas Frank. The other man, Horst, says, my father was a Nazi leader. And what he did, he had to do. He had no choice. But he didn't want to do those things. He didn't want to declare that whole towns in the Ukraine full of Jews would be executed. He didn't want to do that. Therefore, I embrace my father and his life. This is a powerful movie, guys. This movie has, at the center point of it, a man named Philippe Sands. And Philippe is a Jewish survivor of a family of Jews. There were 80 of them. 79 of them were killed by the Nazis. He's the survivor. What a brave man to go into this relationship with these guys and say, I want to talk to you guys. I want to find out what's, now that all that's history, now that all that's over, who are you and how has this affected you? I really admire Philippe Sands. I'll introduce you to them. On the left, that's Horst. In the middle, because he is looking at a tall grass field underneath which are about 4,000 Ukrainian Jews. Just a mass execution. Just below the surface of that ground. And then Nicholas is on the right. Horst is the man. And if you watch this, you'll like Horst. He's a gentle man. But he says, don't blame my father. He's just doing his job. And Nicholas says, that's brutal. That's less than human. My father was a butcher. And I blame him. So that's what we have here. And here's the thing, guys. These two guys are very kind to each other. But as time goes on, and this time is a matter of not just months, but of years, I think. They just find that they can't connect. And they really can't connect because in all these instances you see where Horst has the evidence. This is one of those places because his father was the reason that those people died. And it's presented to him and he said, not his fault. Not his fault. That's his dad. That's Horst's dad. He's a handsome guy. This is just one picture of him. But man, he was a striking man. Otto. And highly educated, smooth guy, beautiful family. There's a nice picture of him with his family. And I think if you're in Germany and you meet Otto, you think, wow, you know, Otto, you got it going. And this is Hans Frank. Now, if you're in any way a student of World War II, you've seen him before. Because there are any number of films with him and Hitler side by side. In fact, Hans Frank is the reason Auschwitz did what it did. It was under his Polish control. He controlled what went on in Poland. And Hans Frank was the father of all that. So we have here two Nazis. One, in the view of his son, is a good guy. The other, in the view of his son, not even to be considered. Now, you watch this movie, and you see these two guys back and forth and back and forth. And there's no question early on which one you can embrace. And it's painful. It's not a happy thing to hear a son say that my dad was an absolute creep. Power hungry. And then the other ones say, my dad was a fine man of the arts, and he just was doing his job, and he's not to be blamed. And you just want to shake him. And you want to say, you know, there were people who resisted. There were people to whom it cost them their lives. But they were right. Now, Hans Frank was tried at Nuremberg, which is where the Irwins are this morning, by the way. And I told them about all this, and they're like, you know, we're going there. And I sometimes get into the teaching mode right when I should. I should have been talking about water parks and things like that. And I'm saying, Nazi rally, Nuremberg, come on. And he died at Nuremberg, executed. The famous trials at the end of the war, you know, movies and stuff like that. Ha-ha. Otto, the brave Otto, was Catholic. He goes to the Vatican. And they hid him until he died in 1949. He wasn't even brave then. Interesting, isn't it? Okay, so I asked the question, personal or impersonal, and then I tell the story of two different views of that. Now, I'm going to ask you to deal with this. Deal with this in your inner man and say, why have I come out here and said that Nicholas Frank was a butcher? And also Otto von Wachter was a butcher. Why have I said that? It's because of the value that I am placing on humankind. Hans Frank is considered to be the reason that 3 million, did you hear what I said? 3 million Jews died because Hans Frank put all these things in motion, and then he husbanded this whole thing. He had dominion over this whole thing. And why does that hurt? Why does it matter? Friends, I tell you, if we live in a materialistic world, it doesn't really matter. Because there is no ultimate mattering. It only matters to the degree that I care to get fussed up about it. But it doesn't, by its own nature, matter. But I know. Let me take you back to Shaw Hall, 1972, the fall. I'm in a class. I never said anything in class. I'm in a class called American Renaissance. It's about literature of a period called the American Renaissance. And we have a character in our class, a man named, first name is Patrick. And he was always Mr. I know everything. And don't lower me by having me discuss things with you because I'm smarter than you are. He was really that arrogant. And he goes into this materialistic explanation where he thinks he's so haughty, and he's saying, you know, there really isn't any transcendent meaning to anything. There really isn't any reason to have a moral sense. And I thought, Dave, you got to talk. You got to say something, because everybody's just sitting there like this. And so I just interrupted, and I was scared to death. I said, Patrick, if a little girl walked up outside this window, a sweet little girl, and we saw a car pull up, and a creepy-looking man gets out of the car and grabs the girl and throws her in the car and takes off, should we care? I don't know why this came to me, but it did. Well, of course. And I said, why? Why does it really matter if there is no absolute anything? It doesn't really matter. And he was silent. And I thought, I spoke in class. I'm still alive. And it's because of the mannishness of man. There is something in the makeup of mankind that separates us from the rest of creation. And I'm saying that I get my sense of the horror of any kind of murder from the sense that whoever is doing the murdering and whoever is being murdered so sadly are both made in the image of our Creator. And that matters. Because it's the absolute degradation of that image. Isn't it? To say, I'm taking your life because I can, is so arrogant. It's so godless. It really is. Genesis 1:20, let us make man in our image. And would somebody, who's got a Bible handy? Jennifer, would you look up Genesis 9:6? Seth and Rick and Jennifer are in, they go to our church in Funk's Grove, and they came here today, and I appreciate that. Would you read that for us? Yeah. This is flood related. This is the world has gone wacko. We've got to put the world back into some kind of order. So mankind, understand this. If you're going to take life of another human being, you need to understand this. Your life is going to be taken. What do you think is the intent of that? I think the intent is justice. I think that the intent is we don't want people taking each other's lives. And if you take a life, justice will be meted out to you. This is definitely Old Testament justice. This is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And that comes from the Old Testament, doesn't it? But this shows us for this entire discussion, we could have a semester. Seriously, we could have a semester talking about this. We're doing it today in 5 minutes. But let's think about this. God says, mankind, we're making him soulful. He's soulful. He's immortal. He's immortal. He's ethical. He's ethical. And man becomes unethical. And God says, that must be dealt with. And of course, this leads us to Jesus, and that's a whole other wonderful thing. Scott, I'm going to go for just about one more minute, and then we'll sing. Okay? Let's think back. You're in a meeting of the Nazi power grid. And I'm telling you, at that time, friends, you think nobody can stop you. You don't think you're going to be stopped. You don't think that your plans are going to be foiled. You think you're winning and that you can do whatever you please. And you've believed the rantings of a madman. And a whole nation of brilliant people have left their foundation in faith. The very nation where the Reformation was birthed. This is just lost. And they believe these rantings. And they kill their neighbors. Why does it matter? It matters because of who every human being is. Every human being. I'm looking at Ferris there. Bless his heart. He's so cute. He's got so much ahead of him. He's in a wonderful family. I've heard his pastor is just beyond. And then I look in the mirror and I see myself and I think, yeah, it won't be long. It won't be long and a lot of your questions are going to be answered. That's true. We don't know, do we? But we do know this. that I can love. I can love you, and I do. And you can love me, and I love and accept it. Because I'm different than this chair. I'm even different than that tree. I love our garden, you know I do. But I'm glad I'm not a tomato. You can quote me on that. We are this fabulous, eternal, beautiful creation that's beyond our ability to understand at all. And remember, friends, my last point today. When we look at this creation song, may we see beauty. This is a song of beauty. And when the beauty is besmirched, that has to be dealt with. For this to remain godly, the beauty has to be reclaimed. Thank you, Jesus. Let's sing.